Welcome to the Quick 10 podcast, brought to you by QuickTrack, focusing on all things FedCon and cyber defense from different perspectives and different personalities, all in 10-ish minutes. Here's your host, Derek White.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Quick 10 podcast. I am your host, Derek White, Chief Product Officer here at QuickTrack and Beryllium. My guest today is none other than Regan Edens, who is the, the chairman of the CMMC Industry Standards Council and Key Compliance Officer at DTC Global. And Regan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Derek. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. You know, it's been many years since we first originally met, and the previous episodes we've had here, it's been kind of fun to go through some of these relationships and conversations that sadly hasn't really gone on a long time. But to see where things are at now and to see where things are going, thank you for being on and touching on what's going to be a pretty sensitive topic, I think, to a lot of those that are listening or watching. And we're going to talk about what it means currently here as we hit the midway point of 2024 on starting or restarting your CMMC program. So we know some things happened at the end of the year. We've had some things happen this year. We've got things that we're speculating that will happen as the rest of the year goes on before CMMC is something that can be in a requirement in a contract. So the question to get right into it today is the scenario of we're talking to an organization right now. Okay. Our audience is in a scenario where CMMC has been prioritized off and on.
Sure.
This organization has DFAR 7012. So this is not a new thing to them. This is something they have to be doing. They are required to be doing. But maybe the organization lost somebody, they left, and now somebody is there to pick up the pieces. And maybe that organization hasn't been left in the best scenario. Or maybe leadership has put it back on the radar after having it sit still waiting for things to be more formalized. So it's back on the radar. Where are you advising and telling this organization to start today?
Well, that's actually pretty common. And let's start at the beginning. Right. So the organization has current requirements right now. So we know that the DFARS 252, 204, 7012 clause is in their contract. That means that there's the related clauses of the 7019 and 7020. So likely they have to meet the 7012 requirements. They have to testify to those requirements and have an updated SPRS score and have that score for them to be eligible for either the current prime contracts or their current subcontracts. So laying that foundation is really important, because what that does is that says, yeah, we've got a sense of urgency and priority for CMMC, but reality is that we've sort of been juggling or maybe dropped the ball with the DFAR 7012 requirements right now, right? So that now we've got really equal footing, which is we got to own our current liabilities and risks, and we've got to really get position and focus to be able to meet this impending timeline and deadline that we're going to see emerge underneath in 2025. So let's take a very close look at what are our requirements as they are right now, not CMMC, just the DFARS requirements right now.
Yeah.
So we have to have an updated system security plan, and that system security plan has to be updated annually. That's DoD policy, right? We have to have conducted our risk assessments and our security assessments as prerequisites to updating that plan. Okay. So we documented that, by the way, even though the NIST standard 171 says, you know, you don't necessarily have to document it, but we know that for the SPRS score, it requires adequate and sufficient evidence to justify the score, right? Mm-hmm. So for every point value that we have, assuming that folks in the audience is probably a mixed audience, some of them may know what SPRS is and some of them may not. But SPRS is a point-based system used to evaluate your current readiness and compliance with the DFAR 7012. For every single point value, that has to be justified with adequate and sufficient evidence. If we don't have the evidence, and it's not adequate and sufficient, then we shouldn't have we shouldn't be giving ourselves credit for that score. So now we understand that not only do we have to have meet these current requirements, but we have to have the appropriate documentation in place, very detailed, in order to sustain and support the current eligibility requirements. So, you know, oftentimes the very first questions that I ask is, all right, when was the last time that whoever's in charge now took a look at the system security plan? When was the last time that they conducted their risk assessment or their security assessment? DTC Global, we'll call them RSA, right? You know, combined together. Mm-hmm. So when did we do that last? And, you know, many people call that a gap analysis, but in my humble opinion, that's not enough because we're looking at gaps, we're looking at nonconformities, and we're also looking at areas of conformity, right? So we just don't want to understand where our gaps are. We have to understand where we're not compliant and we thought we were compliant. And we also have to understand the areas that we really need to address in order to have adequate and sufficient evidence to sustain the score we give ourselves. So that foundation sort of lays the groundwork for where are we now, who's been involved, who's in charge, right? Do we have advocacy at the senior executive level? Do we have participation led by the IT team? Do we have participation led by our CUI stakeholders? That's what I call those folks who send and receive and develop CUI and performance of their contract, right? Do they even know that they develop CUI or very likely in a manufacturing environment that they develop CUI and performance of their contract? So do we have folks like quality involved? Do we have folks, do we currently produce or handle export controlled information? So the next real step on that process is who are our stakeholders and then begin that CUI discovery process. Are they aware of the types and categories of CUI that they actually receive and develop in performance of their contracts? So very likely it's going to be controlled technical information and export controlled information. And do we have any in-house expertise about those two different types of information? Because yes, they are very similar, but there are very, very important differences according to DoD policy. Mm-hmm. So now we establish the fact that we need some stakeholders on the business side. This isn't an IT project. And if we leave it to the IT folks, we're absolutely going to fail. So there's no way to survive a U.S. government audit or an audit by a prime contractor if we leave it to the IT people, right?
Yeah, that's not a knock on the IT side either. It's that this is an IT and security working together problem, right? That's what the requirements say. And I think the scenario that we're talking about here, and then I'll let you obviously finish here, is
sure.
We've seen a lot of this in the last 2 years where it was an IT project and that person or people don't work there anymore. And it's not necessarily because they were told to leave. They were, I think we see this, like they can see that this is going to be a tough to not get buy-in from leadership and try to have a successful outcome here. And they've gone somewhere else, right? And now because they put it on one person, that person's not there anymore. The new person who comes in is looking at a mess. Like, how do I make something of this? So I think that's a huge point when it comes to passing an assessment is a totally different scenario than getting something put together to then run an assessment. So sorry, keep going.
Yeah. You're spot on, Derek. Remember that my responsibilities as an IT person are to provide the infrastructure and the resources for the business to run on the IT side, right? And to provide security for those requirements and provide compliance for the things that I'm responsible for. And if I switch hats, who's responsible for the actual information? Because as the IT guy, I'm not responsible for the information. I'll defend. Or I will make compliant whatever the information is, but I don't know where the information is. Mm-hmm. I don't develop the information. I don't receive the information. So the IT stakeholders have, in my mind, actually the greatest responsibility because they're a living, breathing thing that's taking place during the performance of the contract. And oftentimes the IT teams don't know that much about the actual contract performance and what's taking place.
Yeah.
But you've got this harmonious relationship between the IT infrastructure and what happens, Derek, if we outsource part of that, right? You know, do they know what responsibilities are on their plate? Do they know what the expectations are? Do they know that compliance is coming for those outside services that we may external service providers that we may outsource? Mm-hmm. What happens if we may be a medium or small size ship, but what happens if we have a mothership? Does the mothership know that they might be involved in depending upon the shared services, involved in actually being compliant, being required to be compliant? So we've got these real challenges about that are happening on both sides of the fence. The most important control of all the controls is 313, which is how do we control the flow of CUI? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, every single one of the controls and safeguarding requirements is about the protection and the confidentiality of CUI. So where does that CUI flow? Wherever it goes inside of our business process, and wherever it goes inside the IT infrastructure that supports that business process, mm-hmm. in order to deliver the products and services that we're contracted to do. So we have to be able to have a situational awareness and knowledge that controlling the flow of CUI is a bifurcated process. You got one side of the fence, you got the business process stakeholders. The other side of the fence, you've got your folks out there who are providing the IT infrastructure or coordinating those services, right? So now that we laid that foundation, that I'm not just the IT person sitting inside of my cube wondering how am I going to possibly get all this done when I'm frustrated or that I don't really understand the requirements very well and I don't understand what CUI is and I really don't understand how these requirements really apply in terms of the management, operational, and maybe some of the technical controls, yes. But the management operational controls that are going to take place, again, beyond my area of responsibility, beyond my area of accountability, now I can't hold, I don't have the power to hold people accountable. And so I need that senior executive buy-in. So yeah. that sort of foundational reset is really, really important in order to make progress. Because what's going to end up happening is, if I'm the IT person and I open up the good book, NIST 800-171, and I started access control, I'm going to realize that I'm going to get three-fourths the way through the controls. I'm going to get into configuration management. I'm going to get into controls like 346, 347, 313.1. And I'm going to realize that there are parts of the company that I thought were going to be in scope that are not allowed to be in scope because they're not essential capabilities. And we've got a split environment that we do. We don't do all military stuff. We do about 20 or 30% of our stuff is military or DOD stuff. Mm-hmm. So we got 70% of our work has no relationship to the DOD work at all. Sure. So now how do I manage those resources and that IT flow and the challenges regarding scoping and regarding isolation and regarding essential capabilities and essential programs and essential services? How do I manage that when I'm three-fourths the way through the book? Yeah. And then I discover that I don't know anything about the essential capabilities. What does it take to execute the contracts? Well, I mean, I've got some idea, but I don't know everything.
Yeah.
So now I have to three-fourths the way through the book, I've got to stop. If I realize where I've gone wrong, then I've got to find my IT stakeholder or my CY stakeholders and find out what is it they need to do their job.
Yeah.
And now I have to undo all the previous work that I just did. Because now I realize that there's these other responsibilities that we have to incorporate of people I don't control. So having that reset and understanding the fact that the requirements, number one, should not be implemented. This is not a romance novel. We're not starting at page one of NIST 800-171 and reading it from front cover to back cover, right?
Yep.
A spoiler alert, the good stuff is the middle towards the back, right? Mm-hmm. That's the stuff that the IT people should be aware about. Because that sets the boundary of the environment along with the scoping guide.
Yeah.
Scoping guide, Reagan, what's that? Right? Mm-hmm. What are these other resources that I need? So now I have to realize as an IT person that not only do I need the NIST 800-171 as a revision 2 as a primary resource, but I also need these additional resources that I may have if I was there previously in the previous years. I may have thought that the CMMC assessment guide or something like that was the Bible and that I was going to use that as my primary reference. And of course that we know, you and I both know that was never true, but we're thankful that the rule actually caught up with it. Right.
Yeah.
And so we know that those changes are important, and we got to be aware of those changes.
Yeah, and we're going to have to wrap up here because that's all. So first off, yes, thank you for walking through that because we've seen way more conversations, as I'm sure you have too, in the last 6 months of I need help. I got to figure out where to start. And I will say from our lens and what we've seen, because you can't, be required to be CMMC certified yet. So what seems to be working really well is for these individuals or these teams who are trying to clean up a mess, is that when they develop a really strong plan of how they're going to do it, that gets accepted, builds a lot of confidence with their mothership, if you will, or somebody, right? To buy in leadership is, hey, you know what? I wasn't here. To your point on responsibility, this is where we're at. This is a moment in time assessment, which they're required to do. This is where we are short, but here is what we are capable of doing, and here's what we're not. So we're going to allocate these resources to these, right? And like build an actual plan, like you said, rather than read the book from the beginning and then get three quarters of the way through the book. And now someone says, well, show me your plan. Like, how are you actually going to get there by then? So I don't really know. We're just trying to figure it out. So I think that's a really good topic point. We've talked about this on the previous episodes. We're going to revisit these topics in, we'll call it 6 months or so, once the rule is in place and things are starting to happen and there's more feedback from whether it's DOD or assessors or whoever on how it's going. I think topics like this are going to be very, very important for people to do something, right? Get in there and start doing what you can. So last thing for you.
Derek, I just wanted to to summarize the theme of what I just talked about over the short few minutes is the IT team needs to discover what they don't know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And by discovering what they don't know, they're going to find out that they cannot do it alone. Mm-hmm. And they really need to buckle down. And it is a team effort, as you just said, Derek.
Well, where can people go to talk to Reagan and his team for help?
Sure. So you can reach out to us at dtcglobal.us. Okay. There's another DTC Global out there, I guess, in Florida or whatnot. But they do IT support. You can also reach out to the CMC Industry Standards Council, and we established that as a mechanism for good folks out there who are anxious and worried about discovering what they don't know, right? You participated in this for many years now, Derek. Mm-hmm. You and Eric both, along with other folks from Creek Track, Brook, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And reach out to us in the CMC Industry Standards Council and submit the questions, and we'll make sure that you get the answers that you can depend on with reliable and consistent information that's really consistent with the standard and give you the guidance and direction that you need.
Perfect. Love it. Thank you, Reagan. Appreciate you having time on. I know it's hard to get through some of these topics in 10-ish minutes, but when they're relevant topics, we need to get through them and give people a real good lens. So thanks for those for listening. And if you want to subscribe on YouTube or go to your favorite podcast platform and follow along for past episodes and future episodes, you know the drill. So thank you again, Reagan, for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
Absolutely. Look forward to it, Derek.
Right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode, and make sure to subscribe to the Quick 10 Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and check us out on YouTube as well. For more information about Quick Track, visit our website at www.quicktrack.com. That's CUICKTRAC.com.